recorded live from Orlando, Florida and Nashville, Tennessee, you're listening to The Dapper Danielle Show, starring Ian Wilson, Clarence Kelly, and now, here's your host, the one and only, The Dapper Danielle.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dapper Danielle Show. I am your host of the most, here with my other co-host, Clarence Kelly and Ian Wilson, my brothers. And we are so excited to jump into this next episode with y'all about some of our favorite spooky time things. And I really want to focus a little bit on some of the Headless Horseman lore, because that is my personal favorite Halloween short that appears on Disney, in the Disney world, and actually is very underappreciated, an icon of the late 1940s. What do you guys think?
I would wager a lot of people probably don't know the origins of the Headless Horseman.
You think so?
I think so. I think a lot of people seeing him in the parade probably don't know what he's from. Or that he's like, yeah, or the story of Ichabod. And
that it's like, based on a real book from the 1800s.
Yeah, I think I don't want to say people are
uncultured,
but I do think I think your average person visiting Disney probably has never heard.
Oh, so actually, okay, that's a good question. I want to know, have you ever heard of the Headless Horseman before even this episode, or have you seen him in Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party and you just see him ride on by and you're like, oh my goodness, that's such a spooky fella. Look at him go. Like, did you know that he's from a cartoon short that was narrated by Bing Crosby? We'll get into that a little bit later. I don't want to spoil. I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah. You're giving too much away at the very beginning. We just started. Come on.
Just dangling a little in front of them. That's all I'm doing. Yeah.
Exactly. But before we do that, I mean, we got to touch on some hot topics, you know?
We do. I say we go ahead and jump right into it. We do have a couple of things that we want to talk about. And honestly, this one is really the breaking news of October. Actually, the day we are recording this, it is currently October 4th, but this will be releasing the next week afterwards. And a very popular musician just released an album. Taylor Swift dropped her Life of a Showgirl album on October 3rd.
Snooper. They dropped their record yesterday.
Who?
Very popular Nashville band, Snooper.
Exactly. No. But Taylor Swift dropped her album. I know I had so many friends that were so excited for it. However, I have an opinion on a couple of things, and I don't love how much all these corporations have been building into this and really riding the coattails of the Taylor Swift genre, if that makes sense, and like of the Swifties. And I'm like, I don't know, I'm not personally a Swiftie, but I have many of friends that are, and all these corporations have posted out these videos. Even Disney Parks has made multiple posts saying like life of a cast member, life of whatever, and like using the Taylor Swift like album glitter art type stuff. And I'm like, I don't know if I love that. I think it's a little, are you just riding the coattails of one of the biggest musicians in the world right now? And is that necessary? Right? What are your thoughts?
Interesting.
Have you seen these videos?
I've seen some of the posts from like Disney and stuff. I think it's tough because Taylor Swift right now is kind of like the Avatar from Avatar: The Last Airbender. It's like you have the nerds, you have the jocks, you have the entertainment industry, you have the sports industry, and only the Avatar, master of all four elements, can unite these people and lead them to salvation, essentially. You know, so Taylor Swift is arguably the only person in the world right now that has probably the highest approval rating when it comes to celebrities. I mean, just, you know, entered into new stratosphere last year, just in terms of awareness, in terms of just, I think people knew about her, but then, you know, really just became a cultural icon last year. So in to another level. I mean, she was already there, let's be real, but to just one more
global
higher
level.
Exactly. So I think that there is naturally going to be some element of everyone realizing, wow, this is so, you know, universally cultural right now that we almost have to make something about it. So yeah, I don't know. To me, it's not really offensive, maybe in the same way it is to you, Danielle, of being like, I don't, like, I don't know if it's offensive. Like this.
I just think it's, I think it's a little too try-hardy. It's cringe. I don't love it. I mean, there's been a lot of content.
Not the hot take I was expecting us to have today is Danielle really? Saying that she is against Life of a Showgirl copycat.
I did not say that.
But I'm not saying you're against the Taylor Swift music. I'm saying that you're against the, like, you know, glamping onto it kind of, you know, and trying to ride the coattails. You know,
you know what I think it is? Is that I have a problem with fake fans. Right. Mm. Especially when it's something that I'm very passionate about. And it's like, okay, like Orange Bird, for example, like I talk about Orange Bird, I talk about his history, all this other stuff. And then these people come in claiming that they're big fans of Orange Bird, but they don't know anything about him, or they'll post about Orange Bird, or they'll create fan art about Orange Bird just to try to, like, talk to somebody like me. And they know nothing of this character. They just think he's a fruit. They don't know any of his history. They don't know anything. Well, I feel like that's the same thing with these corporations doing something about Taylor Swift. Are they just, like, latching on to the trend? But they're not true fans. They've never listened to an album before. I mean, maybe the one younger millennial that is probably working in their social media department is making all these calls. Yeah, maybe. But then it's like, okay, did you not think this through of how you're, as a social media person, you're reflecting your company and your brand? Is this really a great brand idea? Is this something you really want to latch onto?
That's interesting. Before I share my thoughts on this, I just want to, like, point out, y'all heard it here first. Danielle is gatekeeping Orange Bird.
I am not gatekeeping
Orange
Bird. No one
else is allowed
to
be a fan of Orange Bird.
That is not what I said.
If you don't know Orange Bird's history, name three shorts that have Orange Bird in it. It's like when you walk up to someone in a band tee. It's like, name three songs.
I mean, but at the same time, that's why I don't. Okay, maybe I am that person. But, like, not specifically about Orange Bird. Okay, I was just trying to use that as an example. But, like, I don't wear. Like, have I been blessed to go to the Club 33 lounges? Yes. I am not a Club 33 member, though, and I refuse to wear Club 33 merch. Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. All the DVC member stuff that is exclusive to, like, Old Key West Resort, that's all Florida themed. I love that stuff, but I refuse to buy it and purchase it because I am not a DVC member.
Interesting.
Right? I'm not a part of that. It's one of my random tangents.
I think something to keep in mind when thinking about, like, corporate buy-in for Taylor Swift is Taylor Swift is one of the most corporate artists in the industry.
Okay. Give us your perspective on this from the, like, music industry, Clarence.
When we talk, like, corporate partnerships, Taylor Swift has some of the most. Mm. I mean, I was literally at Starbucks for an official Taylor Swift pop-up where they completely repainted the store, put a new sign on the front that said Starbies. It was in Nashville. It was here in Nashville. It was at the Starbucks near Vanderbilt. It's happening today as well. They were doing friendship bracelets. They had a pop-up record store. They had an official photo booth that me and my girlfriend got a picture in. And there was this giant orange record. And it was official partnership. It was an official partnership with Starbucks. And you can go to Starbucks and get your drink Swifty style and do it, and they'll do something special to it. Maybe they'll spit in it or something. I don't know.
They have a vial of Travis Kelce sweat, and they just add a couple of drops.
That's nasty. Stop that.
But also thinking about, like, her records and the official partnership she has with Target and all Target mm-hmm. locations, and that they get a special vinyl variant that isn't available anywhere else. And she has that with Amazon as well. And so you have this artist that has these global, like, corporate partnerships for the rollout.
Which at the same time, like, record. Girl, get that bag. Proud of you. But
sure. Yeah. And I think, though, like, if she's going to do that, like, we can't really complain about corporations hopping on the bandwagon because that's who she is.
Because she's could also be charging them to talk about it. It's helping her, but is she getting some type of kickback?
Sure. I mean, she's getting kickback just by like people discussing the record.
I mean,
she's on like driving streams.
Yeah, I think Clarence is just saying that it's like she is obviously very familiar with the corporate world. She's got the business knowledge of how to leverage the corporate world and use that to her advantage. Mm-hmm. So it's not really surprising that kind of the corporate world also embraces her. And really, when you think about it too, I mean, she's pretty neutral as far as, I mean, yes, she's got her opinions, but like, no one's really scared to touch her. You know, there's a bunch of other artists where it's like corporations, I think, are scared to, you know, post something that could potentially link them to that artist because it's like, well, I don't really want to be linked that. But I feel like, I don't know, Taylor Swift, again, just kind of this universal person right now that can kind of be in both camps, you know, whether it's political or cultural or whether it's just a lot of very wide fan base. So I think that's another reason why there's a lot of corporate connection to her, is just because it's like there's no downside to linking your you know, brand to that type of fan base because it's just so broad. So it's just easy. You know, it's like, I feel like Starbucks, there's a lot of artists I can think of where Starbucks would not want to be connected to them just because it's like, yeah, this is just whatever. So
I get that. I agree.
Yeah. But that's
clear too. Huh? Yes. What were you saying?
I would say too, as someone who actually enjoys Taylor Swift's music, and like likes a few of her records, I would say a lot of her songwriting is very safe and corporate. Mm. And like, it's made for a broad audience. It's made to appeal to a wide number of people. And that's what corporations want. So like, even musically, a lot of her stuff is just kind of that. You right. know?
I understand. Actually, that's a very good point, a very valid point. But mm-hmm. Clarence, since you have actually listened to the album, I have not had the chance or the availability to. Do you want to touch on your thoughts of what you thought on this album? Like, there's a couple, like watching the Taylor Swift movie, it's over on Disney Plus. You can watch it over there, stream it. And it's the whole concert series from, what was it, 2 years ago now?
Eras Tour.
The Eras Tour. I loved that. I thought that was great. I just haven't had a chance to listen to the new album yet. So if you want to indulge us on what you thought, since you went to the official listening party, do you want to give us a couple of nuggets about that?
It's not good.
The album's not good? That, okay.
A bad record.
That's the other thing that I've heard from other people in the news networks, is that it's not her best work. And it, mm-hmm. like, it's okay, okay, but was it overhyped?
Like, I mean, yeah, and maybe you're not like this, but I feel like for me, I've had at least one or two Taylor Swift records where initially I've been like, yeah, I don't like this at all. But then 2 or 3 years later, I'm like, actually, this has grown on me a lot, and I really like this record now. Whereas kind of the opposite has happened to me as well with her music too, where I'll have one where I'm like, this is so good, I'm really liking it. And then like 2 years later, I'm like, yeah, these just aren't my favorite anymore. So do you think it's one that has anything that's like could be enduring, kind of change your opinion? Or is it just like, yeah, not my cup of tea, pretty sure it's going to stay that way?
I feel like most Taylor Swift records, I will go back and listen to again, give it a second try. I don't feel the need to do that after this one.
Oh.
I've listened to it and I'm like, okay, I'm done. Like, cool. It is a record. It is. I think the songwriting is juvenile. I think a lot of the lyricism is really cringe. She's writing as if she's still a 14-year-old. That got her first record deal is what it feels like. There's a couple lines in there I'm like, wow, I probably would have thought this was like the most philosophically deep thing if I was a sophomore in high school. But as keep in mind, she's a 35-year-old woman, like as a someone in your mid 30s, what are we doing? Musically too, I think the production is lackluster. I think it's dry in a lot of points. There's not a lot of variation. I think something that stood out to me a lot was how dead the drums sound. I mean, they just sound flat.
And I am such awful. Like a I am such a led by drumming in the background. Can I drum? No. Can I hold a beat? Absolutely not. But if there's like drums being really pushed, or like a really good guitar solo, or you know what? No, I am a sucker for a trumpet or a trombone section. Oh, love me the woodwinds and the horn section, but yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I think too, something I talked about with my girlfriend last night, and something I experienced working at a label, when we were working with an artist, I will not say her name, that was very big in our industry. There comes a point, so for people who don't understand how like A&R works in a record label,
essentially, what is A&R?
A&R is artist and repertoire. So it's basically the front line, like interacting with the artists. So,
and y'all thought you were just going to hear about Bing Crosby and stuff. No, you're going to get a whole lesson on the music industry. You know, themed entertainment, y'all. Let's go into it. Okay, continue. Uh-huh. Sorry,
so,
Clarence.
So basically what the artist and repertoire, it's also basically what it does is it is the relationship arm of the label. So most artists will have an A&R employee like assigned to them, or someone that found them. Usually it's the person that like found their music and brought them to the label and like got them signed.
Yes.
The one that presented their record. So essentially like every A&R is the one that's like talking to the artists. They're helping them along. They're helping them find writers. They're working with the publishing team to find writers and producers and work with them. And ultimately, when it's time to put a record together, A&R is the one reviewing the music. And so A&R is basically saying to the artist, this is good, this is bad, this one needs to be worked on. And so like there is a process for like when songs get selected to be put on a record. A lot of times an artist will submit like 20 or 30 songs and it'll be whittled down to like 10.
And that was what your job was at the label.
No, I wasn't A&R. I was creative.
Ah, okay.
So I was designing everything.
But the A&R people would come to you and say, hey, these are our songs. This is the theme. You make it look pretty and bring it visually to life, right?
Essentially, my job was creating the brand for the music. But the music was already decided on.
Got it.
So there comes a point, though, where an artist gets so big, A&R doesn't have a say, and the artist just gets to do what they want. And this is something we experienced at the indie label I was working at. We were working with a very large artist that she just kind of was like, this is the record. This is what I'm doing. And
you can't argue with her.
Y'all are going to put it out. And it's like, A&R is like, okay. I mean, we can't really say no. And I'm sure Taylor is so big at this point. There's no one that can tell her no, or tell her like, this song's not good.
Right.
Or tell her like, we need to rework the track listing. We need to explore different songs, different producers. Hmm. She's going to just do what she wants. And I think the majority of the time you see that negatively affecting the records because there's no one speaking into it.
So and I think she didn't have an A&R person is what you're saying in this.
I would wager there's no one telling her no. It's all just yes men. Because she's so big. She's like, why does she need that?
Right.
She can just do it on her own. I mean, and maybe like, I think for
she
the
backboarded
most part,
some
she,
ideas off of Travis Kelce, and he's just like, yeah, babe, that sounds great. That's great.
Yeah,
and then that's why
Travis Kelce, who is probably suffering from CTE or something, like, I'm not going to trust his judgment on music selection. That's kind of how I feel about the Taylor record. I think there was a lot of hype around it. And I think the people who are saying it's like the best Taylor record are fully in denial and need to really honestly evaluate where it sits in the rest of her discography. Because Taylor has phenomenal albums and this is not one of them.
Ian, you listen to some of Taylor Swift's music too, or there's a couple of songs that you really enjoy with Jacqueline.
Yeah, I've listened to all of her records except for this one so far. So I feel like that's the only thing I was going to say is, you know, maybe to play kind of devil's advocate against Clarence here a little bit is, you know, I do think that Taylor seems to be in a very reflective era of her life right mm-hmm. now, seems to be kind of, you know, on this like macro kind of circle, kind of connecting for her just with everything professionally, but then also, you know, it feels like kind of with a new love story and everything, there's bound to be some mm-hmm. introspection with that. So I do feel like there has seemed to have been this trend with her of really being interested in music that she wrote a long time ago and kind of resurrecting that. And, you know, going back to old demos she wrote or old, you know, things that she had just kind of scribbled down and kind of trying to explore that. So to me, I wonder if some of that immaturity or some of that, you know, just, you know, I'm not saying this should be her best record ever. You know, I still haven't listened to it, but just thinking about, okay, yeah, how does this fit into the whole thing? I feel like because she's so big, she might just be trying to kind of like connect the dots, if that makes sense. If I yeah. have these blips that have kind of showed up and I've been able to layer in some other things, but now let's just add in something else that helps connect the dots, even in my old albums, or connects kind of this huge theme of love that I've been thinking about for the last 15 years of my life. And I've written bits and pieces about it, but now mm-hmm. this is kind of the capstone to that, or this is the beginning to that, that, you know, is the capstone was five, you know, records ago or something. I wrote kind of what I feel like the capstone is for that story. So I do think that some of that, for Taylor Swift specifically, some of that massive stardom and that ability to just write whatever you want and no one can really say no to her seems to be really channeled in this exploring exactly what type of music she wants to make, but then also kind of exploring what she has made in the mm-hmm. past and bringing that to life again. And so I don't know, I just kind of wonder how much of that has influenced this label. And again, not saying that that means it should be the best, but just saying that maybe it, I think it, I've been impressed just how much there is when you start considering Taylor Swift's writings as a whole, instead of just kind of seeing them all as individual segments. Whereas I feel like most artists, it's just like, yep, I put out this album, it's what I was feeling, but there's no rhyme or reason to that. But I just feel like, I don't know, maybe that's
she's the queen of the connecting dots. And yeah, so I mean, how does this connect in the dots?
Yeah,
maybe again, I'm sure if we talk to a professional Swiftie, she'd be they would be able to tell us immediately what all these different yeah, things mean. But exactly. from the unknowing or the ones that are not part of that Swiftie community, I could see where it doesn't translate the same.
Yeah,
I would say, because my girlfriend is very much a Swiftie. Mm-hmm. She's not like when you think of like stereotypical Swiftie, but she was obsessed with Taylor Swift as a young girl, grew up with Taylor Swift and has actually met Taylor Swift.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. In a mall.
Back in her mall days?
Yeah. But for someone who is a lifelong fan of Taylor Swift, like my girlfriend, she told me last night she expected something very different and was disappointed by the record. She wanted to like it. She wanted to enjoy it. And it just was cringy. And I think too, like, when you listen to the record, Ian, I think a lot of your thoughts that you brought up are going to change drastically. I think a lot of people going into this record expected it to be kind of like this love letter, and like this like romantic record about her relationship with Travis and getting engaged and things like that. And it's really not that at all.
Oh, that's unfortunate. So. Well, but I'm still going to go listen to it eventually with an open mind, just to hear it once, just because this is a global phenomenon. And I want to see what all these corporations have been making TikToks about.
The Dapper Danielle Show will be right back after these messages.
And speaking of TikToks,
poor TikToks.
Speaking of TikToks, yes, we gotta talk about the amazing, phenomenal, dare I say, groundbreaking TikTok put out by Disney Food, you know, Disney Eats, Disney Parks, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, we're talking about chicken strips.
Mm. Ian, have you seen this?
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay.
Of course. How, you can't miss it. I mean, it's this week has been Life of a Showgirl and chicken strips.
Chicken strips.
That's what everyone's talking about.
Yeah, that's what everyone's listening to this podcast for. Taylor Swift reviews and chicken. Yep. You know, they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, to be fair, many of you might not have seen this video because as I'm looking at this, the view count is awful right now. It's only at 58,000 views for an account that has 11.9 million. And it is literally, this is the audio it opens up with. Clarence, you can put a cleaner version over top of it, but I'm going to start it off with this.
I love how inaudible, how
you can't understand what it's saying.
They're trying. You know what it reminded me of the first time I watched it was the announcer's voice from Super Smash Bros.
Yeah.
Oh, because it's gibberish.
No, it's not gibberish. It's like, just when that, it's like a ton of reverb. It's like ice climbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at least you can understand what he's saying.
Honey Buffalo Ranch.
And
sweet
then
chili aioli.
How, you okay. Know, and what I also think, okay, maybe I'm just having a passion against this, is corporations, specifically theme parks, jumping on trends and not doing a good job of it is what it is.
When
or they're late to the party.
Have ever done a good job of jumping on trends?
You know, I'll put a pin in that because I did see one video that I did like. But this one is, they're holding up, they're starting this off with, it's the little face graphic on a chicken nugget, right? Mm-hmm. And the text that you can't read says, sorry I'm late, the chicken strips were throwing a fit. Because that's the trend, is that it's a trending audio of, sorry we're late, they were throwing a fit. And then you turn to the person and they're just doing like a model slow walk. And they're like throwing the fit, the outfit together, right? For those of you that are not social media or whatever, you're on the different side of the algorithm, that's what they're trying to reference. And that's what they're trying to do. And then they're talking about all these tasty new sauce strips are coming to Disney World. Oh, it's just Disney World. I thought these were coming to Disneyland. It's the same chicken nuggets, just with different sauces on them. Oh my gosh, why is that so loud now? And I love, it has only 56 comments. And I think they've gone through and deleted a couple of comments, honestly.
Probably.
Because, yeah, no, they're not great. They're not good. I saw that video and I was just like, really? This is so bad.
It's like, pretty cringe.
You are a multi-billion dollar company that has these social media interns. And there was a couple, okay, even worse. You have created backlash because of the social media content that you have put out pertaining to the entertainment world, right? With showing that backstage video and showing stuff that cast members have been fired for, right? Mm-hmm. That caused a big uproar. That had a lot of backlash. And you think, like, my hope and prayer was maybe they would have started double checking some of their content. And then you throw this up? Who thought this was a good idea?
I guarantee most of this is some new hire that is really, like, trying to do something different and exciting. I ran into this at my last position.
We had
a social media girl that basically was just like, I'm just going to do all trends. And like, this is what does well. This is all we're going to do. And it was really cringe. It wasn't done well. It was always bad. And the problem with giant corporations, when you try to hop on a trend,
it's late.
You're always late. You're always late. I mean, this trend was popular in August. It's October.
Right.
Like, we're a month and a half behind.
They've have you guys seen my video talking about some of the merchandise I found in Epcot here recently?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. With the t-shirts.
Yeah.
They were doing the one of like the spoof off of Girl Dinner. That's over a year to, actually it's older than that. Girl Dinner was from Alona Mars' sister created Girl Dinner, and she's the rugby star. Mm-hmm. And that was pre the Olympics.
My goodness.
And you're just now getting out a shirt referencing theme parks dinner. And no, you're too, don't even try at
this
point.
There's so many layers of red tape that anybody in marketing has to jump through and go through to do something, to post something, to make mm-hmm. a product. It's never good to try to do something attached to a trend, in my opinion.
Because all it takes is also one very problematic person to do the trend and turn it south very quickly. And you as a company are SOL because you're associated with it.
Hmm.
So what would you have done instead to announce your delicious new chicken strips that are coming?
Talk to an actual food blogger. Bring in somebody that does all the different chicken strips. Or like we have YouTubers that have created their entire identity off of Disney food. And if you want to bring in their audience, people that are loyal to them, invite them to be the first to try these chicken tenders. Even if it is staged, even if they're not good and you're telling them to say it's good, it would be better than superimposing your face and doing a trend from over months ago. Like, I don't know.
So wait, make original content?
Make original content. Ugh. Work with the people that actually build up your socials and your community. I don't know.
Yeah.
Again, they have.
Let's change our logo. Disney. That people. Would do it for sure. Let's change it to just a nice clean font. Why is we can't even read Disney anymore? Like, let's just clean font. No colors,
because then people are going to say we're becoming like Cracker Barrel, so we can't do that.
Well, I mean, that's the way to do it. You know, let's just take out all the decor as well from all Disney World and Disney resorts. We're just going to make them white and bland, and we're going to make them very all millennial gray.
Millennial gray farmhouse. Everything was bought at Hobby Lobby.
Yes. Perfect. I love Hobby Lobby.
It's I was thinking, though, with the cringy nuggets, for first of all, they actually looked okay to me. I mean, I'm just going to say that right now, that I'm a sucker for chicken nuggets. I'm a sucker for sauce. But
yes.
I also was like, this feels sort of like a Epcot festival. We need like a passport for these or something, where it's like all the chicken nuggets and you go like try them all and get like a stamp for them, and then at the end you unlock like chicken nugget with secret sauce or something like cool, because I feel like I don't know, there's
that,
so many see, they're all in like different
that is
locations.
Brilliant marketing, like, Ian,
thank you. I don't know, you should hire me, Disney, if you're listening, but
they have our emails, they
yeah
can,
but
they can
I,
reach out to us.
I just feel like that's like, it seems like a challenge. There's so many, they're in so many locations, there's, you know, you can't, there's not really an easy way to just try them all like there are with some of the other, you know, food announcements. But right? I kind of like the idea of trying to like collect them all, you know, at all the different locations or something. It sounds fun.
Yes. Oh,
it's,
my goodness.
It's just Pokemon. For
it's just
chicken,
Pokemon, but
for chicken
nuggets.
Tenders.
You can eat them.
Well,
instead of...
gotta eat them all.
Lol. Well, okay. So I, you know, I did say that Disney has her email, and they do. They have my Disney, my Dapper Danielle promo ones. Mm-hmm. They have the Dapper Danielle show ones. And y'all, we also want to hear some more of your cast member stories, like what we posted in the last episode. We loved that little story. It was so much fun. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And we want to hear more from you. And Clarence, we also were kind of toting around the idea of hearing some Halloween stories as we continue into the month of October, right?
Definitely. Definitely. I think something to keep in mind for anybody listening who is going to the parks around the holidays, cast members are working on the holidays. Like, yes. if you're coming from out of state, like from somewhere that's not Florida, like if you're in Tennessee, like me and Ian are, everything is closed. Christmas, Thanksgiving, like nobody's working because everyone's at home with their families. Something to keep in mind when you're mm-hmm. going to the parks, these cast members are away from their families on the holidays. And mm-hmm. maybe for some of them that's good, but I think a lot of people want to be home with their families. So just as you're interacting with cast members, I feel like it's important to keep that in mind and really just be extra nice to them as the holidays are coming around. And if you're working at the Disney parks, if you are a cast member and you have some fun holiday stories around Christmas, Thanksgiving, or any other holiday, send that in. We want to hear it, good and bad. We want to hear about how someone burnt all of the turkey legs in Hollywood studios, or about how someone made some magic moments with Christmas cookies or something. I don't know why my two examples that I thought of were food related. Maybe I'm just hungry.
I love that. Or like my favorite is, I personally did enjoy working on Christmas Eve. Was probably my favorite, because really? You know, we're going to step away from Halloween for just a moment. We're going to talk a little bit about Christmas season. One of my favorite things was working near a radio on Christmas Eve and working a little bit into the evening, not before midnight, but because I wanted to be home before Santa Claus came. That was the main thing. And but we tracked Santa, and there was a specific radio call that still happens at Disney World, at least. I don't know if Disneyland does this, but Disney World. Disney security partners up with basically the military and track Santa and to see where he is in the world before he approaches Florida airspace. Mm-hmm. And they give out hourly updates saying where he is, and it's the security update for Santa Tracker. And I loved one of my favorites was, I was in recreation. We were closing down the movie on Christmas Eve. We finished watching a Christmas movie and we're rolling up the TVs, and there's these kids are still there talking to us, and they're talking about what they're going to be doing the next day in the parks for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it gets close to the hour. I'm like, guys, come listen. And we turn up the radio so that way everybody around us can hear. And you hear the, only 2 more hours until Santa starts entering Florida airspace. This is your Disney security update. And then you have one little kid says, we gotta go to bed now.
That's really cute.
It was so cute. And that, like, stories like that just warm my heart. And it was like, okay, yes, was I not home for Christmas Eve? That, yes, but I also got to see you guys in the morning, and then we had Christmas morning, and then I worked a shift later on that evening on Christmas Day. And I still had my family time. It was great, but I also had a really great experience with my guests, and I love hearing those stories. And like, how did you make magic, or how did a guest make magic for you? So I just it just warms my heart. So do you have any good stories from Halloween spooky season, or are there any that we can start batching for the month of November and December?
Yes. Send those in. Please send those in.
And that's going to be to the podcast at thedapperdanielle.com. That's the email for the podcast show, and we would love to hear your stories.
The Dapper Danielle Show will be right back after these messages.
You guys are familiar with the Headless Horseman, right? You've seen him go up and down Main Street here at Walt Disney World during the Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party. Ian, have you seen this? You have not been to a Halloween party before, is what we discussed.
I have not been to a Halloween party, but I've seen many videos, and I have met his horse as well.
Yes.
But not the Headless Horseman, you know, hard to make eye contact with him.
Yeah, it's kind of. I mean, he's got the pumpkin he's carrying around, but there's nothing else to make eye contact with.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And this, y'all, these horses currently live, and they still live over at Tri-Circle D Ranch near Fort Wilderness Campground. And then these horses, they some bougie working horses. I'll tell you what, they are living the life over there in the Disney barn. And their caretakers and the cast members are in charge of them. Their cast members are obsessed with these horses and will do anything and everything to take good care of them, give them their daily, every other day groomings, what have you. They're eating the nicest hay, getting all the little sugar cubes and snacks imaginable. And they're loving it. These horses, you can actually go and see. Sometimes on their off days, they are not hidden in the back. They will bring them, and you can actually walk through and do a mini tour of the front of the barn with some horses that are in good spirits. They have all their snacky snacks, and they're just hanging out there, and they're looking at the people that are coming by. And they're huge. They're gigantic horses. Mm-hmm. And the one that also is the Headless Horseman's horse also is usually Gaston's during 2020 in the cavalcades, and Gaston was riding on a horse. This was the same horse. Very, very cool. Very impressive. And the rider is basically riding blind. As he, not to ruin the magic, but they are riding blind, and they are holding that pumpkin. They're holding the reins with the other hand.
He doesn't have a head.
So. He doesn't have a head, but he has the pumpkin head from the story.
It's not ruining the magic. He's just, doesn't have a head. He's riding blind.
Stating facts.
Yeah. Just stating facts. So he is blind. And the cast member is fully trusting the horse, basically, especially in certain turns and what have you. So one thing I think is interesting is how the horse is portrayed differently between Disney World and Disneyland. So in Oogie Boogie Bash, not only is the Headless Horseman there, but so is Ichabod Crane. Did I show you guys these videos after I came back? I don't know if I showed this.
I saw them.
You saw them?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if Ian's seen them.
I don't know if you shared.
I don't know. I will have to share them with you. But Ichabod Crane and two other lantern holders are traipsing through the street during Oogie Boogie Bash. And there's this audio that kind of tells the story of Ichabod and the Headless Horseman. And it's very cool. But because the horseman is not trotting, it loses its, like, pa-pow factor, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. The one in Disney World, it just has this eerie, ghostly music and the wind kind of rushing through and announces the Headless Horseman is on the way. And then he just clops by. So even though he's not full sprinting, it has a more impactful, like, presence to it. And you're like, okay, this is spooky season. This is impressive. Let's go. Headless Horseman has ushered in the Halloween season. It's time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but both are cool. I'm glad that he is at both. And he has more recently made other appearances in some of the other international parks around, like, 2016, I guess, is when he was introduced elsewhere. But he's been part of our park culture for a little bit longer. I am interested about what you guys were saying about how people might not know this story or might not know that it's based off of a real, like.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that that came up too. Because, I mean, for me, it's like a classic American fiction tale. Like, it got to be like a, I don't know, English 101 high school. You know, I just feel like you've got to have read this book at some point or this story. I mean, possibly not, but
maybe in your AP literature class.
Yeah, but I feel like Headless Horseman, and then the same guy wrote Rip Van Winkle. It's like classic, like, American, almost like grim fairy tale-esque type storytelling, kind of, that was just so ingrained in, you know, American literary and storytelling, kind of that progression, you know. Mm-hmm. So I am the pessimistic me probably agrees with Clarence that, yes, things like this have dropped off the face of the earth. They don't seem to be, you know, as people don't have as much knowledge of them. But I feel like I'm probably guessing there's a solid chunk of people that have at least familiar, have read it, have felt like they picked it up at some point.
Isn't there a small town? Oh, isn't it, like, it's, the name is a real place and they still celebrate, like, Headless Horseman Day or something like that in the fall. Like, that's their whole festival.
That's interesting.
Clarence, I'm going to have you double check and do some history on that while I'm talking about this.
Yeah, I mean, are you thinking of, like, Westchester County in New York?
I know Westchester does something, but there's somewhere else that's mentioned in the story that is a real place.
Other than Sleepy Hollow?
I think it's Sleepy... No, there is a... Oh, Sleepy Hollow. That's what it is. But there is a real Sleepy Hollow.
Okay.
And they celebrate.
It says that Wikipedia says that Sleepy Hollow, New York is the setting for the story and has many of the reference locations can still be visited today. So I'm not sure if there is a...
I want to say they have festival. Like a whole fall festival all themed around it. Like, it's part of their identity.
That makes complete sense.
I weirdly want to go and attend it. Like, I just want to go see... Like, everybody else wants to go to Salem, Massachusetts for Halloween. I want to go to New York for Halloween for this reason.
But yeah, maybe, I mean, for those of you who don't know, it's a, you know, it is a based on a short story written by Washington Irving in the 19th century. So it's mm-hmm. called The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. And it basically, you know, gives a lot of the backstory, if you're not familiar, if you haven't watched the Disney short on it, of some of the backstory on Ichabod, some of the backstory on his the woman of his dreams, Katrina, and kind of how the Headless Horseman is maybe real, maybe not. That's kind of some of the, you know, the mystery of the Legend of Sleepy Hollow is, okay, yeah, you know, what, you know, was this kind of the jealous other lover of Katrina that chases off Ichabod, you know, this kind of puny little school teacher, you know, not really, you know, anyone, or is it actually the ghost that kind of gets him? But yeah, very interesting. I mean,
No, that's great.
Interesting to me, this whole, the Legend of Sleepy Hollow, because definitely I think in that time period in American fiction, you know, things like the woods and this kind of, you know, especially the woods are always this scary place where evil things happen and stuff. And so there's so much symbolism in the Legend of Sleepy Hollow that we kind of just gloss over nowadays. But I do think that there's, you know, there's just elements like that where it's like, even, you know, Ichabod moving through the woods is just this, like, you just, you know, it's almost like a horror movie nowadays where, you know, the characters moving into the room where they shouldn't go. It's like, I just think there's elements like that that are probably were in the original story that then were in the Disney, you know, kind of faithfully depicted in the Disney short. But then nowadays it's like, oh yeah, just the Headless Horseman. He's just a scary dude that carries around a pumpkin, kind of. So anyways, yeah, that kind of my thoughts on it, but.
No, that's fabulous, Ian. Yes. And now with that in mind, since it is a whole story, the original intention of this was to make it a much longer movie. It was not intended to be part of the anthology films that came out in the 40s. It was meant to be a much longer film, but because of the end of World War II and animation, especially for Walt Disney Animation, was still recovering during this time. Many of Walt's animators went off to war. Many of them did come back. Many of them did not. And really rebuilding a studio post-World War II and deciding, what do people want to see? They want to see escapism. They don't want to be in touch with reality. And so this was kind of those little fun bite-sized pieces that went to the movie theaters. It wasn't one really long story. They were afraid that people would not be entertained for a longer story, or they just weren't ready for it. And this short came out. It was The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. So it came out with the story of the Headless Horseman and Mr. Toad. And it released in 1949 as a back-to-back film. And I don't think people realize that this is Bing Crosby. He is the narrator and the singer of both the Headless Horseman song and the Katrina song, and which are two of my personal favorites. I love both of these songs so, so much. And both, when the song released, it was kind of a flop, right? Really? It did not do as well in record sales. And I think a lot of people think, oh, Bing Crosby, how could it not have done well? Well, he was like the golden crooner voice of the 40s and 50s, but his really big film that went mega viral was White Christmas. That didn't release until almost 5 years later in 1954. So really, he was kind of looking at the seasons and did Halloween season before he got famous for Christmas season.
That's interesting.
He is the ultimate Disney fan before Disney. Yes. He had the Disney seasons down before Disney had the Disney seasons down. Halloween and Christmas.
Something else that was really fun about this song is not only did Bing sing it, which he, don't get me wrong, he was very big for the time, but he also brought in his chorus support. It was his singers in the background of all of these songs from his radio show that was premiered in the 40s and 50s. And the team, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, I think they're the Rhythmaires is the name of his background singers.
Okay.
They were the supporting chorus group. And supposedly, I need to get more confirmation on this, his four sons from his first wife also appear in the audio of this song. They appear, they sing with the chorus. So Gary, Philip, Dennis, and Lindsay, his four sons. He had seven kids.
Good Lord.
Right? So four from his first wife. The other ones were from his second wife.
I had no idea.
I had no idea either. I was like, oh, I went down a rabbit hole with that. But I thought that was very cool. Y'all, if you go and listen to the song, you want something to add to your Halloween playlist, this is a really great song to have on your Halloween playlist. But personally, even though his is the original, my favorite version of it is by K-Star. It's a female singer from this era as well. She sang it a couple years later, and it is the best version of the song. Clarence, do you think we'll be able to put a little blurb of it real quick in this section of the video?
Possibly.
With only a couple seconds without getting in trouble with copyright?
I would have to try, but I'll give it a shot.
Okay. Well, just in case you have not heard it, I will play just a snippet here for you, Clarence, and for you, Ian, so you know what I'm talking about. Clarence, you probably do know this song.
Bulls are bad, but the one that's cursed is the headless horseman. He's the worst.
When he goes jogging across the land, holding his noggin right in his hand, demons take one look and groan.
Then they hit the rope of hearts of no.
Well, there's no.
It is such a good song. Just Dawn, like
so your style, Danielle.
Oh, it's like... so my style. If you guys want to know what my dream spooky season party is, it is literally embodied in the tone and the voice of that song.
Scary, like, but also we're going to go get milkshakes afterwards.
Like, right, not, and a little really doo-wop, a wow, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting talking about the, okay, so, you know, kind of going back to Headless Horseman, talking about the Legend of Sleepy Hollow, the Disney one. This is something that I did not know until starting to write books with Danielle. Danielle, if this is stealing your thunder, sorry for that. But no, I think it's very fascinating, the really critical role that these package films played in the Disney animation studios and kind of the survival of Disney animation.
Yeah.
Kind of, so they have, you know, Snow White is Disney's just huge commercial success as an animated film. But then you have World War II happen, you have a major economic downturn, and the studio was really just not in good shape. And so it was films like Legend of Sleepy Hollow and Mr. Toad that kept it afloat just enough to be able to actually produce and make Cinderella, which was the next film that then just like lit up Disney and sent it into what we know it is today, know it as today. And so, you know, I think it's easy sometimes to just see movies as, well, Disney, you know, always had enough money to be able to produce the films he wanted to, and mm-hmm. everything was, you know, on greased rails kind of for him. But there was this time, I think this was really nip and tuck time kind of for the studio as a whole. And if movies like this that weren't kind of, I don't want to say like guaranteed hits, but it's like, okay, it's a story that everyone knows. It's, you know, you're not trying to do this new creative story and new animation style and see if the audience likes it. It's just, yeah, people like this story. They know this story. Let's just put it in animated.
Well, and Bing Crosby was really the selling point of it.
Yeah.
It's because exactly. The older generation all knew him from like earlier in the 40s, and like, yeah, so he was a comfort character and a comfort narrator for his voice.
Yeah, exactly. And mm-hmm. So to me, the coolest kind of living testament to this, if you will, is actually if you go and you watch Legend of Sleepy Hollow and then you watch Cinderella back to back, you'll see that, you know, Disney being known for reusing animation, a lot of the some of the animated scenes with Katrina are actually show up later on in Cinderella, because as they're making Cinderella, they don't have the money that they're going to get from Cinderella. So you know, just kind of an interesting living testament, I think, to that time period in Disney Studios.
Katrina's animation style and facial and hair color really did carry over into Cinderella, because the same animators that were finishing up Sleepy Hollow started working on the full length film. And they took these same models and ideas and pulled it over to the other one. And that's why there's such a huge similarity, because then mm-hmm. they didn't have to pay too much to work on an original idea of a female character. Like, oh no, our animators already know how to draw this character. The voice and the tone and the animations are different, because mm-hmm. Cinderella is much more graceful animation, and she's much more loving and caring than Katrina is. But a lot of that same face structure, they just like, okay, just take that same idea and carry it over, and made Cinderella iconic. And I think maybe that's why she did so well, mm-hmm. was because animators had time to practice with mm-hmm. this other variation of her.
Well, I think something to keep in mind too, though, is animation timelines. And mm-hmm. this Sleepy Hollow, The Legends of Sleepy Hollow, came out in October of 49. Mm-hmm. Cinderella came out in February the following year.
Right.
So the animators are probably working on both simultaneously.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why there's so much bleed between the two.
Draw the same face twice and then just send it out to each movie.
Exactly. Basically. I mean, you see that a lot in old Disney films. You see mm-hmm. reused animations and like rotoscoping done with older models. And like, that was just, it was a cost cutting measure. It was convenient. And I wouldn't, like,
but it worked.
I wouldn't attribute it to laziness at all.
No.
I would fully attribute it to, you've already drawn it once. Why take the time to draw it exactly again?
It looked great. You know? Do it again.
Totally. Yeah.
Totally.
Okay. I see. And I love that little fun fact. Now some of you are going to like be like, wait, are you serious? Many of you don't know this. And we added that as a fun fact into the I Love Disney's Magic Kingdom book that Ian and I wrote. And I got a couple messages being like, of people being like, oh, I had no idea. And I'm like, surprise. So this Halloween season, now you're going to have to go back and watch the two. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to look at the differences between the short and Cinderella and see if you can notice the inspiration moments or what frames you're like, oh my goodness, that looks like the exact same face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And possibly read the book, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, as well, too.
Yeah, yes, this
Halloween, if you're going to go back and you're going to rewatch old movies, read really old books. It's great.
That's right.
I think
that's
so. Right. Read some Washington Irving. It's funny, Ian, you talked about reading that in school. I never read Washington Irving in school.
Interesting.
Danielle, did you ever read it in school?
We read like blurbs of it. I don't think we ever did like a full sit down. I think one of my I was not part of AP literature, but I know one of the other classes that was in AP literature did read it during the month of October, and they did a whole thing on it. But that also, that teacher really liked Halloween season, but was like, no, we're gonna do Halloween, but make it educational and classical, go. And they were really I think it was AP American Lit was what it was.
Yeah.
My school was pretty exclusive. It had a student body of one. I was homeschooled.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, you were. Yeah. I forgot you were homeschooled.
So the reading plan was a little different than what you'd find at a public school or even a private school. You know, we didn't just didn't follow that. So yeah. Anyways,
hashtag shout out to our homeschool kids. We appreciate you and the fact that you read books that none of us other kids read.
Here's a quick question for the both of you.
Oh.
Do you know the last animated feature that had the Headless Horseman in it? The most recent Disney animated feature. Do you know which one it was?
House of Mouse?
Close. He was in House of Mouse.
He was in the villain series that we just talked about in the last episode.
Yes, but something even more recent he appeared in.
Did he appear in the Mickey Mouse shorts?
No. Ian, do you have a guess?
Earlier or later?
It's more recent.
Even more recent? Disney Junior.
No. Do you want me to tell you?
Yes, I want to know.
He had a cameo in Disney's Once Upon a Studio.
Ah, he did.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so fitting. And I'm glad that he made a reference in there. Because Mr. Toad also made a reference. And Ichabod's in there, too.
I believe so. Yeah.
I love so in the mm-hmm. in the so giant photo that they took, is Headless Horseman just the body and he's the only one without a head in there? Is the horse in there? Or is Ichabod in there?
Up on his head for that, maybe? I don't know.
Just, I'd have you to see go just a random jack-o'-lantern being held up by an arm in the back of the photo.
I like that. That'd be really funny.
I'm gonna have to go look now.
Yeah, you're gonna have to rewatch it and see. And look for the Headless Horseman.
See, I'm so excited to have, I don't know, I really still hope they do this right. So Launch Bay officially closed, right? Random tangent, by the way. But Launch Bay has officially closed to make way for the new animation overlay. And I just hope they do it right. Bring in those really obscure references. Hide them in the pictures. Hide them in the background. Just to make little nerds like myself's heart happy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Anyway, now, anything else that we want to touch on about this? I did want to mention that I need to do more research and documentation on when Headless Horseman actually first arrived to Walt Disney World and appeared at the Halloween parties. We do know that the very first Halloween party happened in 1995, surprisingly mm-hmm. enough. It didn't happen until years after opening, and it was only for one night. Years after that,
how
it became,
novel.
I know, right? A one night event. And that was it. Years afterwards, it became a 3-night event. I think it became a 10 night in like 97 or 98 mm-hmm. and it slowly became more and more. And now we start Halloween parties in August and that's only been within the past 30 years or not even that. Isn't that weird to think yeah. about?
For like the Halloween parties? Like
for the Halloween parties.
Are?
How recent?
That's not weird to me. I feel like if you would have asked me before when Disney started doing the not so scary Halloween parties, I would have said 2005.
Really?
Yeah. I wouldn't have guessed the 90s personally.
Ian, what would you have guessed?
I would have guessed, yeah, probably mid-2000s too, because we went to, you know, Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party in the early 2000s, and I feel like mm-hmm. in my mind, Christmas is a bigger deal than Halloween, so mm-hmm. it makes sense that we would have Christmas pretty well established before we
true.
Do anything around Halloween. But
Halloween has kind of become more of a bigger American holiday. Well, I mean, it's not even American, but like the way Americans do Halloween has become so much bigger just within the past 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And
the skeletons keep getting bigger and bigger.
They do. Bigger those low skeletons are huge.
Yeah.
Do they
yeah,
really?
There's one at the house next door.
So big.
It's really funny.
And you're just like, sir, you're like a hazard because what if you guys had... Okay, that's the other question I have is for those of you that have these giant Halloween decorations in Florida and we are still in peak hurricane season, are you able to dismantle that skeleton quick enough before the hurricane force winds come in? Because if all of a sudden one sneaks up on us and you didn't take down that giant skeleton, imagine that thing flying through the air and some grandma being like, the Grim Reaper is here to get me. It's my time. And he's larger than Godzilla. Like, that's huge.
Imagine calling your insurance company and being like, yeah, is... A 5-foot femur coming through my front window a covered event or not a covered event? Not really sure how to describe exactly what I'm seeing in my living room.
This isn't typical hurricane damage. I don't think you understand.
The customer support.
That's like under an act of God at that point.
Yeah,
and it isn't covered.
Oh my goodness. Okay. You know what? And I would be interested to know insurance for people, would that be covered? And just in the scenario, please message us and let us know. And I would
really
appreciate it.
@thedapperdanielle.com. Please tell us, has a femur come through your front window?
Oh my goodness. Well, I think that's a really good point to end this podcast on. Would you guys agree?
I agree.
I love ending on a femur.
On a femur. You know, not even a funny bone, but a femur. Okay. Well, thank you again so much for listening this far into the Dapper Danielle Show. We will be back again with another not so scary themed episode coming up for the rest of our Halloween season. And until next time, night-night, sleep tight, dream of churros tonight.
Before you close, we gotta like plug some stuff.
Oh, we do gotta plug some stuff.
We gotta plug some things. You got some things to plug.
We do. Okay, hold on. We're gonna retract the night-night churros. I don't know what night-night churros sounds like in reverse.
It's probably some backmasking thing about how, like, Mickey Mouse is supreme leader or something. Like... Subliminal messaging,
and you don't even realize. Subliminal.
Yeah, but no, first, y'all have a new book.
We do, and we can start talking about it now that it's October. Yes,
exactly. So tell the people about the book.
And you want to tell the people about the book? You should tell the people about the book.
So we wrote not part two, but kind of feels like part two, to I Love Disney's Magic Kingdom. It is, surprisingly, maybe unsurprisingly, I Love Epcot. No Disney this time, just Epcot. I Love Epcot, and it is available for pre-order now everywhere you buy books: Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Simon & Schuster, Direct, if you prefer.
Even
to go there.
Anderson's, where we were just at for our book signing in Chicago. You can go to a small business, and you can pre-order through them, too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it will be a very similar format as I Love Magic Kingdom. I Love Disney's Magic Kingdom. So walking around the park, you know, kind of from our perspective, pointing out what's important, what you need to know about all the areas. This one was challenging compared to Magic Kingdom, just because one, the areas are so murky, kind of, you know. Magic Kingdom is so nicely divided. Epcot is not easily divided when it comes to categorizing what you're going to write about, and then also finding a way to maintain word count, so the short word count for each country was very difficult as well too, because there's just
explaining the whole history of the China Pavilion in so many words and being like, can we cut out this? I'm like, no, you can't. That was a lot,
but I think I really enjoyed writing Magic Kingdom, but I feel like this one I was really proud of. I feel like we did a really good job actually getting all the information in there, really making it interesting and showing a lot of things that I just don't think are common knowledge about, especially the countries, because there's so much legitimate historical influence in these pavilions that it's just really, really interesting. So buy the book, order it. It will release, I think it releases January 6th, if I'm not mistaken. So early January. It's a good early Christmas present that will show up after Christmas. So it'll be a great surprise. You'll thank yourself later if you go ahead and pre-order it now.
What's funny is that we did kind of ask the publisher, we're like, can't you release this like 2 weeks before Christmas or something like that? And they're just like, no, we have to have something to release in January. I'm like, come on, guys. But that's fine. We'll take what we can get. It's all good. You can do what I've done for Christmas presents, is that I did this for Clarence actually a couple years ago, is that I ordered stuff and it didn't show up in time. So I printed out a picture of the thing and I put it into a box, and then I wrapped the box and then put a note saying, this is what's coming in 2 to 3 weeks. That's kind of what's going to happen with the I Love Epcot book.
Yep. I would exactly.
I mean, I don't know. I was going to say, I would be willing to say too, that if you pre-order the book and send us confirmation of your pre-order to the podcast at the Dapper Danielle, we will send you a fact from Epcot as a special preview that we have written about already directly back to your email with proof of purchase. I would do that, honestly. So
I was thinking that. I was thinking about if you listen to the podcast, right, and you purchase the book, and as we get a little bit closer to November, we might do this. I'm still kind of throwing around the idea of doing like a fatter, like a little bit wider bookmark with like the Epcot stuff on it, and then like another little fun fact, and then a place where we can sign our signatures, Ian. And that way, if they can't get to a book signing, or maybe they went to a book signing of the Magic Kingdom book, but it's just not in the cards for the Epcot book, you can they can have that to place into their Epcot book. I think that might be cool.
Could be nice to do. So anyways. Cool.
Maybe it's a Patreon thing.
It could be a Patreon exclusive
Speaking
thing.
Of Patreon, yes. Big thank you to everyone who has already subscribed to the Dapper Danielle Patreon. We are very thankful to have you. Welcome. If you want to hear some fun other videos, see some other content, maybe some bonus episodes, some other spooky
episodes. My cringy stories of what's happened to me here recently that I don't share on the internet, but only with the Patreon family. Actually, that happened to me at Blaze Pizza, and only the Patreon family found out about it, and how I feel really old, and I was mistaken for some 20-year-old's mother. Anyway, go watch the video on Patreon.
If you want to hear that story, yes, go to patreon.com, subscribe to the Dapper Danielle on Patreon.
And Clarence, I was going to give this to you, but I ended up giving it away to the Patreon followers. I'm about to box it up and send it to the winner of the Patreon thing. So this was given away to the second and third tiers, the premium bar and the, what was it, refresher category. Mm-hmm. I will be having some giveaways in the next upcoming months for the lowest tiers also, but this was the first one. It's the Pooh Bear blind box.
Uh-huh.
He's a dude. And
he's
so
poo-poo.
Oh, we talked about this on the last episode, didn't we? But yes, so the winner has officially been picked at the time of this episode airing already, and this will be showing up in their mailbox here very, very soon. So surprise!
Yeah, so if you want to be a part of the giveaways, polls, other fun things, go to patreon.com, subscribe to the Dapper Danielle on patreon.com, and of course, please be sure to leave us a review, subscribe on YouTube, mm-hmm. if you're watching this on YouTube, if you're listening to this on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts, please subscribe, follow, leave a comment, give us a review. That helps us immensely.
It does.
Send it to your mom. She will thank you.
It lets other people find out about the podcast, because we're fighting algorithms at this point to let people know that we're out there and that we exist.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think that's all we have to plug. So now we
can I say my thing now?
Yes, say the thing.
Okay. What's that audio from that was trending there for a while? Can I go swimming? Can I go swimming? It's like... It's like me. Can I say the thing now? Can I say the thing now?
Okay. You can say the thing now.
Okay. So again, thank you so much for listening to the end of the episode. And until next time, night, night, sleep tight, dream of churros tonight. Bye, y'all.